Just a quick note before we get going here on the Who's On podcast, a special UVA football state of the program. Had a couple of new guests come on today to kind of talk about the state of where things are, but we recorded this just before the busy holiday week, just so we can get that in. We had a couple transfers since we recorded this, though, and just wanted to talk about them real quick here. Five new players to round out this class at 10 right now, with the transfer portal kind of on a brief pause, with guys kind of going into bowl season. So Jamari Taylor, running back out of North Carolina Central, Kazeem Moore, edge rusher from Elon, UAB center Brady Wilson, a big name there for UVA, Maddox Marcellus, athletic linebacker coming in next to Cam Robinson, and Jamal Adrien, a 6'3", 210 wide receiver coming out of Purdue. So that brings UVA's transfer portal class up to 10 at this point. Ton of interesting names there. We've talked about some of them on some other editions of the podcast at this point, but a really nice recruiting class at this point for Virginia. I know they're kind of getting up there in the rankings, but a nice class so far, filling some needs, but still a lot more to go. And you can expect that to pick up again come January when visits are, starting up again. After this kind of brief pause in the transfer portal. But just wanted to make note of those transfers before we get into a great conversation with my guest today, Brad Franklin from Cavs Corner, and also Tony Covington, former All-ACC football player at UVA and former color analyst for UVA football on the radio. But great conversation with those guys. Also, Merry Christmas and a happy holidays to everyone listening. Here's the Who's On podcast. Welcome into the Who's On podcast. I'm Preston Willett with thesaber.com, and this is part of the Saber Podcast Network. Today, we got a special state of the program focused on UVA football. We got a couple weeks away from the season now. The portal is still going. I want to make mention we are recording this on Tuesday, December 17th. The time is 8:18 p.m. So if anything happens outside this window, we didn't get it. That's so, right. This is just for your Christmas week, just to kind of get you into the holiday a little bit, and hopefully some good tidings coming for UVA football. But joining me today, I got a couple new faces to the podcast, but of course, not new faces to UVA football fans. I've got Tony Covington, a two-time All-ACC safety with the Wahoos back in the day, and I got Brad Franklin from Cavs Corner. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. Good to see you, my guy.
Good to have you, Brad.
Good to be with you guys. Happy to spend a little time on this, Tuesday night, talking some UVA football.
Yeah. Well, it's been a couple of weeks now since the season ended in Blacksburg, a familiar feeling for Virginia fans and the Virginia football team over the last 26 years, seeing their season come to an end down in Blacksburg, 5-7 season. And I just kind of off the top, I want to get initial feeling where you think Virginia is after a 5-7 season, just as we're kind of getting into the offseason. We have a couple transfer portal commitments already. Some guys already hit the transfer portal. We're kind of about halfway through that portal season, but kind of where is your feeling at this point? Brad, we could start with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think, it's funny. I think the last few weeks of the season, really changed some things for me. I think the way that UVA handled its quarterback situation, really did not leave me with a whole lot of optimism. It did not leave me thinking that, that things were going really well. Right. I think anytime a coach comes out during game week and says the kinds of things that Tony Elliott said prior, to that SMU game, and then doesn't seem to have like a real plan for where to make that change and how to make that change, and then really quickly thereafter made that change, right? I have no delusions here, right? UVA had a lot of problems as the season wore on, right? Lots of positions where guys were banged up, lots of positions where they're just not as talented, I think, as Tony Elliott and his staff would want them to be. But I think the quarterback position, because of its importance and because it's such a lightning rod, that is the place, I think, where you extrapolate out like, all right, if you handle this thing like this, how do you handle all these other things, right? And for me, that was a really tough turn of events for the Hoos, because it's one thing to go with a guy who you think, because of protection or because of other things beyond their control isn't getting a fair shake. I think we saw, and I think Preston had the stat, right? He's like 20 possessions or whatever it was in a row without a touchdown. And the on the one they got on the 21st, they only really got because it was a little bit of a prayer, right?
Yes.
So I think for me, coming out of the Tech game, the taste in the mouth was real sour, not just because of the way that game went, but because it was such a microcosm of this season and so sort of the time that the staff has had while they've been on grounds. And I think coming out of that, the expectation I had going into the portal season was that it was going to be a little bit of a mass exodus. And frankly, I think they've done a better job of keeping some kids in. Now they got some really good news, and we'll get to that obviously in a minute. But overall, I would say at the end of the season, I wasn't feeling too great about it. But luckily, some things have gone their way, and that has helped. I think it's sort of helped the bigger picture, so to speak.
Of before the season, the over under for Virginia win total was at 4.5. They hit the over, they got to 5-7. I don't think it was the way that people wanted towards the end of it. So, kind of your initial feeling, just kind of where this program is right now as we kind of head into this offseason after year three under Tony Elliott.
Well, at the beginning of this season, to me, there were probably about eight 50-50 games, And so when I looked at the schedule, I said, well, probably a couple Notre Dame at Notre Dame will be tough, at Clemson will be tough, at Virginia Tech will be tough. But it was a lot of 50-50 games in there. And I said, if Virginia pulls off the first few games, gets out of that 3-1, man, we got a shot, knowing how difficult it was going to be on the back end. And this was the season of what could have been, in my estimation, because they were right there a few times. I'm gonna Brad and I are very much kindred spirits, when it comes to just analyzing the coulda, shoulda, woulda type of things. The quarterback situation was mismanaged in my estimation, quite honestly. It was difficult to see it. I think after the Maryland game, seemed that Maryland figured it out, how to handle Calandria, and he was never able to adjust. Everybody had the secret sauce at that point. And so to not go to Calandria at that point, I mean, not go to Tony Musket at that point was a little bit disconcerting, quite honestly. And even down the stretch, when they started talking about it, you looked at the numbers at how Calandra was performing. And I just don't know anywhere else you could have started as a starting quarterback, and it was disappointing. And I think you felt that from the fans. And so me, like Brad, I just was not very optimistic, the way that the season ended. Looking at how things have progressed in the last week and a half or so, have a little bit more optimism now, quite honestly, because it's clear that they understand where the needs are. And they're you see them really trying to get the trenches built out, and that has to be where it all starts. So I was excited to see that, but still a bit frustrated, because we can't talk state of the program without discussing the elephant in the room, and that's the academic constraint that we're saddled with. It's great that we got great donations from, for NIL purposes. However, you can throw as much money at it as you want, but as long as the academic constraints are there, and we're not talking about math changes, but just, tweaking it just a little bit, as Duke has done, as other top academic programs have done, it's gonna hold us back.
Academics is a big capital A later down this rundown for this show tonight. I want to just kind of take it back because I learned a while back, you got to give some breathing room after the season ends, after a game like that Virginia Tech game. You kind of gotta let it breathe. I might have also been a little bit more frustrated because it was very cold in Blacksburg. I had to walk back to my car at, if we've seen that hill that the media has to walk back up to in Blacksburg, and I might have also made the dumb position a decision on my part to drive back to Richmond at about 2 in the morning. So I might have carried a little more frustration. So we got to let it breathe. We got to let it kind of air out a little bit. Just Has things kind of changed in your estimation, Cove, in like the last couple of weeks since that loss to now? Obviously, there's been a lot of news. There's been, obviously transfer outgoings, the big NIL donation. Obviously, still the talk about academics, as you talked about, but also some big transfers coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it's so for me, I'm a little giddy right now because of what I'm seeing. I'm also a believer in addition by subtraction, and so the guys that we lost, I'm not heartbroken. When I look at it, the only one that kind of stings just a little bit is Malachi Fields. But I thought Malachi was going to be gone anyway, to the NFL. So the fact that he's in the transfer portal, kudos to him. He's earned that right, and I hope he finds a place that's good for him. But the other guys, I mean, I don't think that they were game changers by any stretch. And so, addition by subtraction.
Yeah, I got it written down here because I've been kind of making this point. People talked about going into the offseason, this big number of, 40 senior players and, all the, like, I think the number is up to officially like 17 players in the transfer portal. And I keep telling people, look at the names. Who of those names are you missing? Just like you mentioned there. There are three starters in the transfer portal. And that's obviously now it was two earlier. And obviously today we got the news about Malachi Fields. Personal note, love Malachi. Covered him all the way from freshman year of high school all the way up through. So sad to see him go, but I know obviously big opportunity for him out there. And again, I also kind of checked out in my head. I was writing my end of season article and I forgot to even mention that he had an extra year because I just assumed that he was moving on to the next level. But so Malachi Fields, Ty Furnish, starter at right guard, and then Anthony Calandre, the quarterback. Those are the three starters you're missing. So really not a lot of guys, and you're hoping in the quarterbacks that you've brought in through the transfer portal that you've upgraded on Anthony Calandre slash Tony Musket. You're hoping that the offensive line recruits you're getting, you're upgrading on Ty Furnish. I don't know about an upgrade per se with Malachi Fields, but you're hoping maybe just getting more guys in that room that can kind of make a difference. So yeah, I've been kind of encouraged with the transfers going out. I know that, at the time of recording, there's a couple more days left, but at this point, we're not expecting anything else. So yeah, I think they've put themselves in a good spot. Brad, I know you said beforehand you feel a little bit different now that you've had that cooling off period from the end of the season.
Yeah, I would say that it's as much the cooling off period, honestly, though, as much as it is sort of seeing some of the transfer additions they're able to bring in. Real quick, Malachi is a kid that to, we joke about this on our podcast that, we watched that dude grow up, right? Like one of his best friends is his dad is a kind of a member of our crew. And I've been playing, catch with Malachi Fields since before Malachi Fields was Malachi Fields, really, right? So it does kind of hurt my heart a little bit to see him leave, even if I understand, the idea of why you might want to get, put some more film out there, but you might want to go to a little bit of a different place, right? So this is his is, I think, what amounts to a good use of the transfer portal. Whereas you want to do something, a specific goal, like Oluwatimi, right? He had a specific goal. This is what I need to do to improve my draft position, to improve my stock. And, you have to go about it in a different way, right? It has nothing to do with like your previous stop or how much you enjoyed your time there or how much you love the people there. I honestly, I think it'd be good for Malachi to get out of Charlottesville, right? Even if
Spread
it's
the
just a
wings.
season, right? So get out of that comfort zone a little bit. Go a little place a little different and then start your professional career. Honestly, make a little bit of money while you're doing it. But no, to your point, it's not so much the distance from in terms of time. It's the what has happened during that time that I think has impacted me. Certainly the anonymous gift that they got is significant. I think that some of my qualms still come with, well, who's making the decisions? And I think, kind of to Cove's point earlier about admissions, I think there's a larger conversation that needs to be happening around the program. I think that when you look at Not just the athletic department, but the school, the administration, the way the school views athletics. Certainly, there are lots of opportunities at universities across the country, right, where athletics impacts their university in such a positive way, their college in such a positive way. And in UVA, it's almost like the athletics are both a place for pride and excellence, but then also they're almost viewed as like, almost like annoying, if that makes any sense, to the academic side of it. Whereas a lot of schools, they see the athletic success they have on the field, on the court, that kind of thing, as being a boon for them from an academic standpoint because of the eyeballs that it gets and the number of people that it brings in terms of admissions, in terms of people being interested in coming there, right? I don't get the sense that UVA has that sort of holistic view of the way that its athletic department and its administration and in the way that its academic aspects all fit together. Yes, it's great that they got this big gift, but how is that gift being used? And frankly, I don't think we didn't see enough from the school, from Carla, from whomever, right, to sort of help illustrate to us to spread that message of this is how we're going to do this. I think Virginia has always been a little bit late to the game in the sort of different ways that different teams do different things, right? So think about that, how long it took them to add additional staff members on like a nutrition side, right? Think about how long it took them to upgrade facilities, even though everybody else and their brother had upgraded facilities. The way Bronco used to say that the way you do one thing is the way you do everything, right? I'm not trying to pretend that like Bronco's the only person who's ever said that, okay, for the record. Don't email me. But I just look at an athletic department that seems at odds a little bit with the sort of overarching idea of the university. And again, to Cove's point, schools have adjusted to this, right? Nobody is saying that UVA should allow admission to people who can't hack it, right? Nobody's saying that they should create like basket weaving majors. However, there are opportunities that Virginia football would have with players if the University of Virginia would change its policies in terms of how it handles not just transfers, but what happens to those transfers. And from the school side, well, look, we don't want to have a guy who's just here for a year and he's not going to get a degree. But at the same time, listen, you can't tell me that these other schools, like you can see what Duke is doing. And I'm sorry, but if it's good enough for Duke, I think that it should translate, and we should figure out a way to make it both, right? Virginia has this whole thing about being great and good. And I feel like between their athletics and their academics right now, they can't figure out how to make them both fit. They can't be good and great at either, right? Because as good as the university is, and we all know it is, and as talented as some of the teams are, as much success as they've had in the non-revenue sports, right? The place where these two sort of sides of the coin need to meet, they just have not been able to do. So that does change my calculus a little bit in terms of the way I look at the big picture. Now, that being said, transfer portal wise, they're doing a really nice job of not only identifying guys that they want to get, they're going out and getting them. I think getting Chandler Morris is a boon. He fits what I think they want to do to a T. I'll credit my friend Dave Spence, who is one of the members of our podcast, who essentially said, like, listen, this guy is in real life what all of us hoped Anthony Calandria would be. And for some of us, and I'll include myself here because I think I made this mistake too, but thinking that's who he already was, right? This kid is so talented. And if you convince a player like that, given the season he had and the opportunities he had, you convince a kid like that to come to play for you, all right. Now you're changing my equation a little bit in terms of how I evaluate. Even if I'm frustrated with maybe the way the end of the season went, this extra data point does move the needle a little bit for me.
You both have mentioned it already, so I kind of want to jump down to this. We've mentioned the academics, the NIL piece of this, the transfer portal. I had Lo Davis on, the executive director of CAF Futures, on the podcast recently, and just talking about it. And the word that he kept using is that UVA is all in football, that administration has kind of seen, I guess, the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, you've got to be all in for football. Obviously, that comes with questions, are you really? Because we still have this academic piece that's floating around all of this. You're still hearing little murmurs that, well, some of the transfer targets we're trying to go after, your UVA is trying to go after, are not able to qualify, not able to get in, are being turned away by admissions. So is UVA all in at this point, in your estimation? I'll talk about the NIL piece because obviously we had the huge, one-time gift, the largest in UVA program history. And probably by my estimations, talking to people, talking to sources, NIL right now at UVA is probably about 20 million, which is a good chunk of money. And that's what, funny enough, we talked about UNC just down the road. That's what they've been boasting about all for the last couple of weeks with Bill Belichick. And yet their NIL $20 million includes the revenue sharing, which is not part of UVA's that 20 million that I'm talking about with Virginia right now. So they're in a good spot NIL wise, but again, we keep coming back to the academics. And you mentioned Duke, you mentioned some of these other schools. UNC is a school that prides itself on having strong academics. We could talk about that another time, but Cuff is like, oh, I don't know about that. But do you believe, kind of right now, the words you're hearing that UVA is all in to it enough, Cove?
No. I mean, like I said, you can throw all the money you want to. I think, of course, everybody in athletics is all in. Paula is really trying to get administration. I think President Ryan's in, but it's the powers that be that they, that it's above their pay grade, and so them trying to hustle upstream is just challenging. And as we've all said, if Duke can figure it out, why can't UVA? That just blows me away, And until that piece changes, you can't say all in because it's you got about 75 to 80% that are all in, but the ones that control that last 20% are not. And until they decide to, hey, come on in, the water's warm, we're gonna kind of be in that same place because there are flat out kids that cannot get in, that have gone to other universities, that are talented people. One of my buddies was telling me about a five-star kid in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, wanted to come to UVA badly. They couldn't get him in. That's where he's going, Virginia Tech. And so when I continually hear fans, oh, they aren't recruiting, they are trying like crazy, but they are truly being sent to a gunfight with a hand tied behind their back and a plastic knife.
Strong metaphor. Now I went to Elon, so I'll say that I don't really have an opinion. I've asked a lot of people that do have UVA degrees what they kind of think about the academic situation. Does it cheapen the degree if you kind of lessen academic standards? I don't have a degree from UVA, so I can't really speak on that.
Well,
Yeah,
the way,
but
Cove,
go ahead.
I would say it like this, and Cove, I hope you agree with me on this, but it doesn't change the standards, right? If you change the process by, because all the, because again, to Cove's point here, right? Nobody is saying that UVA needs to be lesser than, right? The idea is to just to do it differently, right? To do something that the school has not to this point done. Again, to Cove's point, Duke is doing this. Duke is doing that. Stanford is doing this, right? Stanford just hired a GM, right? I would love to see UVA go to that model because nothing makes more sense right now in college sports than to have somebody who is tasked with handling it like the business that it actually is. And, again, I went to James Madison. So I, maybe, I was one of those folks that, grew up going to UVA games, and certainly I don't have the sort of personal academic experience. However, I feel like I know enough to know that if you want to say everybody's all in, the everybody has to include all the decision makers, right? And it's pro there's always going to be friction between athletics and academics. That's a story as old as time, and it will continue to be that way as long as they play college sports, right? But I do think that you can't really stand on all in until you do have that buy-in from the other side of the shop. And right now, I don't think that it's, I mean, to Cove's point, like, you know, it does feel like a lot of times UVA goes into situations where they just are not playing on the same playing field. Now, to be honest, I think there have been situations where Tony and his staff, maybe they have gotten into the mix in recruitments that they probably shouldn't have, you know, maybe tactics and all this fun stuff. So it's not just the school piece, but from a strategy standpoint by the school as well, like, it's hard for me to really buy into the idea that they're all in when I look at the situation as it is. And there's such a contrast between that and the reality that I wish it was, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Looking at, I guess, just kind of the state of the roster right now, we've talked about a couple of the transfers. Again, great transfer additions. A quarterback, you get North Texas quarterback Chandler Morris coming in. Nebraska quarterback Daniel Kalen, which I've been all over that move because I saw Oregon do it last year and I was so jealous because I was like, that is so smart. If you can pull it off, if you can do it. Now we're seeing a couple schools go out and get two quarterbacks. Just saw Wisconsin do the same. You're seeing it a couple different programs do that now where you can go out, get a veteran guy, get a younger guy to come in, redshirt, and come in later. It's a smart move if you can pull it off. A couple other two defensive backs, you got a defensive lineman as well. So they're rolling there and it seems like they're offering the right guys. And then looking at the guys that they got coming back, there is some talent. I guess, Cub, how would you grade just kind of the state of where this roster is right now?
With these new upgrades, I'm still at a C right now because they just need so many pieces.
Yeah.
You know, you're losing significant guys on the offensive line, the defensive line, the secondary. They're hurting in the secondary. So, I mean, I was so glad that they got two defensive backs. They need another corner and another corner. You know, because when you look at the roster, when I'm looking specifically at the secondary, you know, you lose a Jonas Banker who was kind of the anchor back there. You know, you had one corner in Kempton Sine. That's all you had. And then overall playable depth is what's killing Virginia. You know, when our guys are healthy, we start the season, I like our one. You know, that's great. But when those guys have to sub out, the talent level drops off a cliff. And so those starters have to play more. So that's why they're injured and banged up. And we just, that playable depth is killing us. So for me, they can't recruit and bring in enough guys to fulfill that defensive line, that offensive line. Think about this year, we had the most guys in camp on defensive line. I was like, all right, we finally got depth. Same thing for offensive line. We get to the season, this guy's gone for the season, this guy's gone for the season. And I'm like, well, wasn't that a key guy? Those were key guys that we were supposed to have. And we couldn't overcome it. You know what I mean? And then every transfer for portal is not a home run. You know, we had some misses coming out of the transfer portal, specifically in the secondary. And so, you know, you hit with one, you don't hit with another. You have one that leaves who you think is going to be significant, but he wants more playing time and he decided to make a move for his career. You know, so there's just a delicate balance of if a kid's not happy, even though he could provide you that playable depth, he's out of here. I'm going to redshirt so I can get in the transfer portal. Well, man, you're talking about a tough job for coaches. You know, A, not only are you trying to recruit really good high school kids in, not only are you trying to recruit your own team every single year, you're still trying to recruit new guys out of the transfer portal. And then you may have a guy in the spring and he decides, hey, I'm out of here in the fall. So, man, I do not envy the job of college coaches. A friend of mine just texted me, hey, why don't you reach out to somebody and start coaching? I text him back, are you out of your mind? You know, because I said, for me, I wouldn't want to coach college football as much as I love the game and I love working with kids, you know, off the field or watching film. I'd rather coach them off the field with helping them develop life skills and life plans. Because for me, that's a whole nother segment that's missing too.
Yeah, it's a wild world, especially right now for coaches. Just, I mean, you're seeing coaches go to the NFL just because it's a little bit more calm. And you think about the NFL schedule, like that's a pretty crazy schedule on its own. But college is just nonstop right now. Yeah, the roster is at a really interesting place. And Tony, I totally should have prefaced before. The time now is Tuesday, December 17th, 8:46 p.m. So anything that happens, once again, I'm going to keep reiterating that. So they could fill some of those holes by the time this podcast comes out. I might make a little note at the beginning of the podcast if they do, but yeah, they've got a ton of offers out there. They're trying to fill those holes. I'm expecting this to be the largest transfer portal class they've brought in. And that's honestly, that is timed out the way they wanted it to be, because this is something we haven't mentioned yet either, Brad, is this is kind of the going into year four for Tony Elliott. This is where all the Bronco Mendenhall era recruits and players are kind of being phased out. They've graduated, they earned their degree, and Tony Elliott said when he got in, he wanted them to have the chance to earn their degree and kind of move on. Now it's kind of that roster reshuffle. We'll call it a rebuild, kind of a retool.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I think all college coaches, when there's a coaching change, there is this period of time where you're not really sure if they're having success. Are they having success with their own guys, or are they just having success, more success, because they're getting more out of the guys that were already there versus oh, well, this guy was going to be good regard, you know what I mean? This is sort of like on the old coach's ledger. To your point, you know, certainly because of the tragedy at the end of the 22 season, you know, there are guys with eligibility remaining that otherwise wouldn't have it. And so you might see, you know, a guy like Malachi who decides to go elsewhere. But to your point, you know, we are in that place now where the vast majority are going to be Tony Elliott guys. And one of the things that the transfer portal does is it really shortens the shelf life on that. Well, you're now playing with the old coaches' guys. However, if you look around the success of that roster last year, a lot of those were not necessarily just Tony Elliott guys, right? Now, you could make an argument, and I think you could make a convincing one, right? That Tony's coaches did a good job of getting a lot out of those kids, right? I think you could also make an argument that, like, there was a lot left in that cupboard, and we really shouldn't be talking about a rebuild at year four, right? And that's probably the thing that sticks in my craw the most. When you look at this roster and the number of places, I mean, realistically, they need a transfer portal addition at every position. Right. Some more than others. Right. So they needed a couple quarterbacks because of the way they played the quarterback thing. They really could use some help on the offensive line. Unfortunately, in the portal this year, you know, how some draft classes, you know, quarterback's bad or running back's bad, whatever. Like the portal class right now for the offensive line is really hard, and everybody needs offense. It's the hardest position to recruit accurately. Right. You know, it rivals, we certainly, you know, the mothership, they do everything they can to adequately forecast these kids. But the reality is, offensive line is the one that makes the least sense, right? In terms of the guys who ultimately become somebody and the guys who ultimately everybody thought were going to be somebody and then just aren't. So yeah, the fact that they're in a position in year four where they have to get so much help, I think is a problem. Again, I understand that the model has shifted, right? And if you're going to have success in this day and age of college football, you're going to have to do a lot of portal recruiting and traditional recruiting. You're going to have success at both. The trick is to find the right kids who are marinating while you're finding the other places, the other guys who are going to fill in the places where you need help. And it goes back to my thing about the last week or so of the season, right? A lot of the decision making really stuck with me because it did not feel like what you do when you have your stuff together, right? And if you're making those decisions or and kind of doing those things on the quarterback side, well, what are you doing on the strategy side in terms of your recruiting? What are you doing in terms of like being able to not just identify players that you want, making those re relationships, making those connections, getting them on grounds, making sure they understand the long-term plan? How can you sort of sell that, right? And I think one of the things that's really telling about this portal season so far has been, to Preston's point earlier, the two quarterback thing. I mean, I think that's a really hard that's a sticky wicket, right? To convince one guy first that you want him to come, and then at the same time, you're in the process essentially of having a kid on grounds, and you got this other guy you actually want more, and you're able to get that commit. I'm gonna give them their flowers, right? Like that's what you got to do, right? But what we're talking about here is like table stakes at this point. You know, and so on the one hand, I want to give them credit for the things that they're doing correctly. But I think it's also important that we shine a light on the fact that like these are things that they just have to do and they haven't done them enough. And the fact that we're talking about a rebuild in year four, that underscores not just the pressure I think that's on Tony Elliott as the season draws closer and goes underway. But then two, I really believe that if the thing doesn't go well, man, it could take a long time, regardless of any big gifts, right? It could take a long time for the program to sort of get itself back straight, not because people don't care, but because people stopped caring, right? And I think that's the thing that they run the risk of. This is I can't put enough, exclamation points on this. This is an incredibly important offseason for them. And certainly as we get ready to get into those winter workouts and spring ball ahead and all that fun stuff, man, the pressure is going to be just astronomical on this coaching staff to deliver with whatever they got in the cupboard, right? I don't care what's in there. You better put together a hell of a meal.
The way I phrased it going into the Virginia Tech game, it was, win and almost all is forgiven, lose and you've got a lot of tough questions going into the offseason, but the biggest one of all is apathy, just the fan base completely dropping off. As we saw the season kind of progressed, the fan base kind of stopped coming less and less. They kind of came back a little bit more for that UNC game, biggest letdown of the year, and they stopped coming, for the next game against SMU later on in the season. But you bring up an interesting point there about, a lot of the guys that were productive this past year were Bronco Mendenhall era recruits. And one of the big things that Tony Elliott talks about so much in this program is being a developmental program. Most of his guys at this point were freshmen or sophomores this past season. How would we grade, Cove, I guess, just where this program is developmentally than developing these guys that they are bringing in?
I give it a C, because you're right. This is a developmental program, basketball and football, and you come to UVA, you develop into a good player. If you stick with it, if you do the right thing, you'll develop. Like you can look at a guy like a Malachi Fields, where he came in from high school, kind of a project because he did it all at Monticello, And so then you watch him improve every single year. You're like, that's what it's about. A Jonas Sanker, you see him develop every single year. That's to me, that's coaching. When you can develop guys. The frustration with a lot of college coaches now is that, and the reason that they're just up and leaving or they're foregoing head coaching jobs to just be an assistant is because the development is not, they're not allowed to be able to develop these kids. They aren't staying. If they're not playing, I'm out the door, not realizing that you need to develop. There's a reason that you're not playing. You look at a Calandria. Calandria never even plays if Tony Musket doesn't get hurt. He doesn't, And so I hate that for Tony, But Tony is a guy that loved the program and was you saw him working at it, and then he just couldn't stay healthy. I felt like this year was going to be his year to really ascend. He just didn't get the opportunity. But then I look at other positions where guys aren't developing as much, And so then you look at receivers, Coach Mims doing a hell of a job. I think Coach Heff did a great job considering what he had to work with. He made the O-line serviceable. I know they took a lot of heat, but a lot of it wasn't necessarily on them, but they took a lot of heat. But I see the progress. Those of us that know the game, we see the progress. Defensive line, love what Coach Downing does. He is a heck of a recruiter. I love how he goes about his business. The guys work. They work hard for him. They respect him. I appreciate it. And then I look at what goes on. So if we talk OC, DC, I think that with Coach Rudd's system, he kind of been pigeonholed in with the talent that he had. You know, I like what he has. I think he wants to be more aggressive. He just can't be more aggressive. It matters when you have two lockdown corners out there, you know, then suddenly the pass rush looks great. But if you don't have those guys, then whoa, those guys just aren't getting there because guys are open, you know. So all of those things go hand in hand. On the offensive side of it, I look at not as much creativity on offense, doing things that you know, route concepts I question, but are those byproducts of a 4 foot quarterback back there that can't see over the line, that can't climb the pocket, you know, are those byproducts of that? And so you're trying to utilize play, really design your offense around the inadequacies that you have on offense. I think that the running back position, we were in good shape there. I thought Xavier should be playing a heck of a lot more because he's a more explosive guy. You know, and you know, so there's so many little pieces that, you know, I know we all jump on Dez because of the red zone issues and some other play calling, and I'm guilty of that too. But I understand the game too, but I also understand the deficiencies that he's working with that he has to coach around. I think with a guy like Chad Morris coming in, if they build that offensive line, really build it up, build some depth around it, I think it will be significantly better. I really hope they go after Claiborne from Wake Forest now that, you know, that I'm sure he's probably going to jump in that portal, but I'd love to see he and Xavier Brown in the same backfield together. But, you know, everybody wants to have a dream, so that'll be mine.
There's your dream. Real quick on a point you just made, I've been talking to some other people about this. Based off the additions they made in the portal, they get Jason Brevard from Morgan State. He's a 6'3" cornerback, and this is actually kind of important because what you said right there, John Rudzinski kind of being pigeonholed into the talent that he has. A lot of their targets at cornerback and in the secondary are longer, more physical, athletic guys. And it reminds me of a conversation I had. I had Anthony Johnson, obviously the former UVA corner, on the podcast earlier this year. And I was like, talking, it was right after the Boston College game when UVA was giving so much space to those receivers in that game. And I was like, can you like explain to me, because I know a lot of fans have been asking about it, like, is this how they play? Is this how y'all were playing when he was there? And he was like, that's not at all how we were playing when I was there, because obviously you had Anthony Johnson, Finchell Cypress, two all ACC level corners, so they were a lot more physical. I think that's what Virginia and what you mentioned before, that's what John Rudzinski wants to do. And so now they're going after maybe some more of the guys that fit into that style. And you look at, you know, obviously they've brought in a lot of transfer corners that just haven't worked out, but a lot of them are smaller guys and maybe not as physically strong guys on the perimeter. So it's interesting now that you're kind of seeing them focus in on that, but it's reminding me a lot with what AJ said earlier. All right, real quick, I want to quick grades. We've already been on kind of a grade theme throughout, but season grades, we will start with the offense. First, Brad, what grade would you give to the offense side of this? I start with a good one.
I mean, you know, you don't want to be mean, right? You don't want to be harsh, but you want to be fair. And, you know, what was the thing that Bronco used to always say, that organizations are designed for the results they receive or something like that? I mean, it's got to be an F, right? You go as long as they went, struggling to score the way they did, considering that, like, you know, in fairness, they didn't have Trell Harris for a number of games during the season. That offensive line was actually better overall than most people probably give them credit for. They certainly could run the ball. When's the last time our offense really struggled because but even though they could run the ball, right? I do think, to Cove's point, you know, having a shorter quarterback definitely hurt them, but you can scheme around that. And I just did not see UVA doing a lot in terms of scheming itself into good spots. I saw them a lot of times scheming themselves out of them. And so I know that grade sounds harsh, but like when you have a guy with as much promise, I think, as Calandra had, you know, if you watch the way he's like working through his progressions, you know, he ultimately, I think they were trying to turn him into something that he probably was not going to be. Maybe he finds a system that fits him a little better. This pro style stuff, I mean, it's a very, a very like intricate system, right? It requires the quarterback and the wide receiver to see things and understand what they're seeing and be on the same page in a way that not a lot of offenses necessarily do, right? I was always a little perturbed, especially this season, with the way they didn't use the middle of the field. I understand why they see it as this boogeyman, right? And understandably, right? Like the ball, it felt like anytime the ball went there, it was probably going to get either, deflected or it was going to go to the other side. But yeah, it's hard for me to give anything better than that, given the sort of relative. I mean, maybe they were good at the start, but man, it trailed off in such a way that it's really hard to grade them otherwise. And again, I know that that sounds harsh, and I don't mean to be mean, but I mean, when you go as long as they went without, throwing a touchdown pass, when you go as long as they went struggling the way they did in the red zone, it's really hard to come to any other conclusion.
Yeah, you're kind of talking my grade down as we went. I was gonna go with a D. I might end up as a D minus. I like the improvements that they made in the run game because that's been something Tony Elliott has talked about for years, is trying to establish a run game. Had Kobe Pace and Xavier Brown not both gotten hurt in the last game, they probably both would have gone over 500 yards for the year, which is something a UVA running back had not done since Jordan Ellis went for 1,000 yards. That is just crazy to compute in my head that for all these years they have not been able to get a running game with a traditional running back going. So I'll probably land at a D minus just because I'm looking back at some of the stats now. You finish 16th in the ACC in scoring. You finish, near the bottom of the conference, 14th in total offense, and the passing game just took a gigantic step back this year. And the whole quarterback situation, I think that's got to be factored into it. So I'll go D minus only because I thought the run game was a little bit better this year, but that's the only thing that you can kind of get positive about, Cove.
Yeah, I was all in at D minus too. I was, but Brad was slowly pulling me to that F. Real talk, you were slowly pulling me to that F. Because you're right. I mean, you both are so right. I think the loss of Trail Harris early was big. It was really big because it looked like he was going to absolutely tear it up those first couple of games, and it just. You couldn't double Malachi because you had to worry about this speed guy on the other side. So the safety's got to lean that way. So then Malachi was killing him. Then it was when Trail went down, no one emerged. No one. So then it's drop back, look at Malachi. He's not open. Okay, now let me scramble and try to beat Patrick Mahomes. You know what I'm saying? And it just wasn't, you couldn't do it. And so, when I look at those things, because you're right, the improvement in running the ball, I was so pleased with that because that helps your quarterback. Man, a good running game is your quarterback's best friend, And so that's why I was always, to me, when people were beating up on the offensive line so tough, I'm like, but they're really running the ball effectively. And to your earlier point, you don't usually say, well, they're running the ball effectively, but man, they're giving up 40 plus sacks.
Yeah,
And I
we're
think,
exactly.
and I think those guys, as a unit, were not happy that they were getting the blame, so much blame for the sack, when, sometimes it really just wasn't on them. And so, in its totality, between the inefficiency, the challenging and questionable play calling that we saw, I can't go anything higher than the D minus.
Let's
Real quick,
go.
Preston,
let me add on just to Cove's point right there. How many times did UVA seem to like fall in love with the idea of, well, this dude's on the field, so we're gonna do X, right? And if there's ever a sign to me that that teams don't really know what they're supposed to be doing, it's the force feeding of guys when it's not there, right? Chris Tyree is on the field, so therefore he's going to do this. Or Cam Courtney's on the field, so therefore he's going to do that. I think that not only did they was it unimaginative, but then they kept trying to make fetch happen, and it just wasn't going to happen, right? But beyond that, the Musket Calandra thing, I don't think we should gloss over just, the idea like they brought Tony Musket in to be the quarterback, and regardless of how many times that it seemed like they probably should give him a chance. They he ne We never got to see him with any what I would call like a bona fide real shot to be the guy. You know, we all thought in the preseason, well, if they give the job to Calandra, it means he beat out a really talented player, which has got to be a good thing. And what I think we can probably deduce in hindsight is that what it actually meant was they felt like he was their future, and so they went with him anyway. And so my question is like, well, what does that season look like if Tony Muscat's the guy? If nothing else, he had a command of the offense that I think would have you would have taken some sacks off the board. Certainly there were some big plays or big play opportunities that maybe you might not have had. But what I saw against Virginia Tech was a guy that could have helped them throughout the season. And it would have been really nice to know that. So, I mean, I think that for me also factors into the grade, which is like, I got a snippet of your work and I can see you're better than this and you didn't do it. Right. So that's also for me a little bit why it's hard for me to come to any conclusion other than the one I came to.
You keep pulling us down. You keep pulling us down, Brad.
Man, I'm right there with you. And when you get Tony Muscat comes into the Notre Dame game, all right, they show a blitz. He walks up, tells the center to hold. All right, changes the protection, changes the play, gets back, throws a strike. Calandria, double A-gap blitz against SMU. They're showing it. They're coming. He's back there patting the ball. You don't have enough to block. Virginia Tech, exact same thing. A command of the offense, controlling the line of scrimmage at the quarterback position, which is what is required to be an ACC Power 4 caliber quarterback. You know, and so yeah, I'm slowly. You might have just tipped me over to that F just real quickly there.
Well, I hate to do it, but I mean, you know, it's
Brad has got that moon like gravitational pull.
I just moonwalked right over to an F.
It's just like I said, it's hard for me. And again, I don't think we need to necessarily litigate the Calandria versus Muscat thing, but I do think we need to take the data that we've got from it and apply it correctly, right? And hopefully it's a lesson learned. Hopefully that, you know, as they go forward, they, you know, some of those sort of the ingredients that were in that brew, so to speak, right, will be different. But ultimately, it's hard for me to look back at the season and not think that there was a lot more that they could have done. Again, I understand we're hindsight and that's fun, but man, that offensive line, I just genuinely feel like they deserve better. Right. Certainly they were, I mean, they're probably as banged up as any group I've seen in a long time. And those dudes kept going. And you know, the running game did not suffer. Right. The question was just whether or not the passing game was going to get out of their way enough to give them some chance of success. And so, like I said, I'm not trying to bring the grades down. It's just like the more I think about it, the more it's even more difficult to me think about bringing that thing up at all. So,
and
I don't mean to belabor the point, Preston.
No, I totally get it. And if only I had the time, because I would love to go back through all of those sacks and see how you divvy that up, how you divvy up the blame at the end of the year. And I'm sure the coaching staff has throughout the year, but in my mind, at least half, if not more, kind of fell on the quarterback. And that was Anthony Calandra this year. There weren't a lot of times when there was just free rushers getting to the quarterback. And it brings me back to something that Ahmad Hawkins, the Ball Hawk, had said on the podcast, is like, why not just start with Tony Muscat and kind of go and see if you need to bring Calandra in? And that's kind of, it's the bitter taste that'll kind of stick in your mouth after this. All right, let's go a little bit more rapid fire for these last couple here. For the defense, I'm gonna go with I'm kind of in between a C plus and a B minus right now, because I probably end up at a C plus just because, you know, the pass rush was bottoms in the country. They didn't really make any progress there, but you kind of saw that bend but don't break kind of John Rudzinski defense. And like we said earlier, I think John Rudzinski is a guy that is getting the very most out of his talent that he has at his disposal. And that is not that's a huge question that I have offensively. Is not a question that I have defensively. Cove, I got a C plus. Where are you?
I'm at C plus as well. I mean, I think, you know, with the injuries, you know, Jason Hammond going down early, who he was playing extremely well. The kid's going to be a stud. I think he's going to really help Virginia. And I think the older guys that were there, really didn't make much noise. Sure, it was steady, but they really did similarly to what production was in 2023. But when you don't have corners, that's the result.
Brad.
Part of me, I don't mean to pull the thing down again. Is the success the defense's success, or is it really just that Jonas Anker's like not human, right?
That's
Because
part of it.
I mean,
Yeah.
he wiped out some things, right? But I will say, like, given their injury situation to and like losing the hand, that's tough, man. Because he was flashing, and you could see a scenario where he and like Britton, especially like those two young guys, were really making some plays. And so I give the staff credit on that front, right? So I would probably go with a B minus. It if you think about the ineptitude, consistent like issues, right, on the offensive side of the ball, that the defense kept them in the games that they were in. I think you got to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think, they should have been better, and I will, rue the day when I don't have to watch cornerbacks playing that far off of wide receivers, because it just breaks my brain a little bit, hurts my soul. But yeah, I think for this one, yeah, that feels right to me.
You think of those games, Notre Dame, SMU, Virginia Tech, the defense was making plays, just never got the support from the offense. They're put in bad field position. And you mentioned the names, Jason Hammond, Anthony Britton, Mekhi Buchanan's another one that was out for the whole season. That's what gives me fuel if I'm on the defensive side. I think they have done a great job filling up that defensive line room with some young guys that are coming up. Special teams. It was obvious. It was an F minus 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 last year. How have we gotten? I think we've gotten up past that. I'd probably go with a C because it was kind of a Jekyll and Hyde season all year for them, Brad.
Yeah, I probably would have gone there too, but I'm gonna go do a C minus simply because like you can't have your punter kicking dudes in the back. And that wasn't even just like, oh, he just shanked one. No, you're trying to turn a guy who doesn't punt that way into a dude who punts a different way. I continue to be a little bit confounded by like what the whole special teams solution is and why they haven't figured out to do it differently, right? I understand the staff allocation is what it is. But it feels like there needs to be some holistic changes there. You're right. I think they were definitely improved. There were multiple games this year where like basically special teams didn't hurt anything. And given kind of where it was, that's an improvement in and of itself. But I think there were just some places too where, a couple plays here and there, for this team weren't gonna change necessarily outcomes, but they could have changed moments, right? And it's hard to know how many of those moments you really needed to put together to make something into something. So for me, it's probably a C minus. And it probably should have been better, in part because I think there, when you have a punter and a kicker, your special team is generally not that bad. But we saw again more issues on the return side, more fumbles and that kind of thing. I think part of that probably has a lot as much to do with like trying to make fetch happen, right? I think they were trying to give certain guys opportunities and it just didn't work out. I'll be interested to see if they make any sort of other tweaks going forward in terms of personnel as we sort of watch the thing unfold here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, C, a C minus, Cove.
I'm gonna go a flat C. Just on the strength of that Louisville game with the punting situation,
Yeah.
kicking him in the back, kicking it 15 yards into the. Oh, I was just like, dude, what are we doing? So on the strength of that, C.
I will add one more thing. We were sitting there, it might have been the SMU game, and we talked about all offseason, you bring in guys like Chris Tyree, you got Zadarian Harrison, you got all these different guys that were return options in the preseason. So you're like, oh, this could be, better this year. And then we're in game 11 of the season, and it's Ethan Davies back there returning punts yet again, because that's the point we got to where he is the only guy that you feel somewhat confident that he's actually going to catch the football at the end of the day. And it's kind of the story of UVA special teams where you think, oh, we're getting somewhere, but not quite. That's why it's got to be a C in the middle. Tony Elliott, this is an interesting one. I'm going to hold out for last on this one.
That's fair. If I was you, I would have done on my show, I've done the same thing. That's smart.
Brad.
All right. Man. Man, I gotta go with the D.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go a solid D. I think that in hindsight, the quarterback, like I mentioned earlier, the quarterback situation in the last few weeks was rough. going to Calandria in the first place and sort of looking back on it. Some of the, at the end of the day, right, Tony Elliott was a play caller. And, you know, I expect him as a head coach to be super involved in the game planning. I think at some level you come to the mic after games and you just say, I didn't have the team prepared and I got to do a better job. That's hard for me. I understand that like coaches are not going to get up there and like, start talking about gaps and, that kind of stuff, right? However, it just in year three, I didn't have the team ready to prepare. I didn't have them prepared to play. That's on me. I got to do a better job. I just feel like that kind of stuff, it makes me think that like you don't really know why things are happening. The quarterback thing, again, I understand it's not everything, but it does, it's easy to extrapolate that out and figure out, okay, so this decision-making process, they look like this over here. Well, what's that decision-making process look like over there? I just think that it could have been a much better, they had a lot of momentum to start the season. And if you think about where they were at that first bye versus where they ended up, the juxtaposition between the delta there is just massive, right? And it's hard to overstate just how much air has gone out of the balloon. At the end of the day, buck stops with him. And he clearly is going to get another season. The question, I guess, that he and his staff have to figure out is how to do it differently, right? How to make year four better than the first three were combined.
Tough. We got a D in that in the house already. What do you got?
I'll give him a D plus. I think with the mismanaging of the quarterback situation, and we're not there. We don't know what happened in camp, but
That's a really
what
fair point, Cove. That's really fair.
I look at it from the standpoint of if you go with Tony Musket, you can always go to Calandria. When you go to Calandria first, it's pretty tough to go to Tony Musket at that point. And I think in his heart of hearts, he probably knew that after the Maryland game, and just was kind of stuck because the decision had been made during camp that, all right, this is our guy. We're going to battle with him, and to your point, you're an offensive guy. That's what you did at Clemson, and it was successful. Granted, you had two pretty darn good quarterbacks, but it was successful. I'd be damned if I'm going to rely on someone else and go down with a ship, and I'm not involved with the offensive play calling when I know that I'm good at doing it. And I understand you want to empower your guys, but man, I got to have a little bit more input when it's an expertise of mine. You know what I mean? And so when I think of it that way, and then even when you had a chance at the end of the year to make a switch, at the Q position, and you didn't do it, I love the way that you kind of managed and kept the troops, playing hard, respect that, want you to be successful, and trying anything. Have told him anything I can do to help, I will. He told me to get the alumni back. Hey, I try my darndest to do that. I try to mentor the guys that are there to keep them uplifted. But they're just some. I'm like you, Brad. When you come into the press thing, and I know you're falling on the sword for everybody saying that, well, I should have had them prepared. It kind of doesn't. It's not a good look. Even though those of us know that you're falling on the sword and you don't, you're not supposed to point and finger point at players and whatnot. Give us a little bit more, about of an assessment, because you're watching the same game we're watching. You saw where the inefficiencies were, or areas of concern that had to concern you too. I think it's okay to discuss those things in the post game.
Yeah, you talk about the post game. I just remember after that SMU game, kind of sitting there, and the great David Teal was sitting next to me and just kind of talking to him, and just the dumbfounded that this guy David Teal has seen just about everything in the ACC, and the dumbfounded look on his face, hearing what Tony Elliott said in this press conference about the quarterback situation, about not having the team prepared to play. It was just like that told me all I needed to know. That being said, I will go with a C minus, just a little bit above you guys, because at the same time, with this new conference schedule, without the divisions and kind of play, you don't know what you're going to get out of your schedule. And for to UVA's credit or discredit in this situation, they didn't skip the right teams this year. You got SMU. Out of all the new teams coming into the ACC, that was the one you didn't want to play. You got Clemson. You've got, you got Pittsburgh, who was a good team. I know that beat them, but that was a tough game that they had to play up there. Louisville, another good team. They didn't have to play Miami, but the two teams in the ACC championship game, Clemson and SMU, they didn't get to skip those teams. And if you look at some other teams in the ACC schedule, like maybe a Duke, they got to skip some of those games and not play some of those tough opponents. And I think that's a big factor at the end of the day to if you get to 6 wins, because at the beginning of the year, we're all looking at it like, all right, start 4-1 and you're good. You're looking good for the rest of the season. But that back half of the schedule was so tough. So it was really disappointing to see how he managed it, which I think drops me down a little bit from a C into that C minus range. And the quarterback situation certainly hangs over all of it. I think I kind of put that into the offensive grade a little bit more. But I'm going to go with the C minus at this point. And none of it feels great. You're kind of just like, let's move on. And before we get out of here, I want to get both y'all's opinions, expectations for next season. And again, I could say the time again, but we all know at this point, like we don't know what this roster is going to look like come next season, next fall, even next spring or next week. What are your expectations, maybe baseline, and what they should be for next season, Cove?
Man, it's so tough. I mean, you're getting a quarterback in who has had success, at a couple of different places. The quarterback room looks fabulous because now you've got two young guys coming in. You've got a young guy coming from Nebraska, so you're going to get an opportunity to hopefully develop these guys. You know what I'm saying? So I love how that room looks. But I honestly don't know what the offense is going to be. I just know it can't look what it's looked like the last 3 years. Then, I'm not just imagining the statistics of where Virginia has been the last 3 years offensively, and something has to change, whether it's the play calling, the play caller, the schemes, the route concept, whatever the case may be. I can't give you an honest assessment of what I think next season will be because I don't know what the offense is going to look like. If you get some more offensive linemen in and you're able to, coach help, really get to build some playable depth and really have those guys solid. Xavier stays healthy. You get a couple of receivers in. Terrell Harris he stays healthy. If Sadarian takes a step, if Courtney takes a step forward, and so if you can get another guy, if Andre Green steps forward, so it's a lot of potential what if that I can't give you. Coach Rudd on his side, I know his guys are going to be coached up. My hope is that they can stay healthy. If they get two corners that can stay healthy and a couple of good backups, a good nickel. I like the Neal pickup from Louisville. I really like Ethan Minter as a young guy who seems really knowledgeable and is in good positioning. And looking forward to talk. I met him, last week at the career fair. He and I connected, exchanged numbers, and so we've already been texting back and forth. So, looking forward to maybe watching film with him and seeing if I can help him see things a little bit faster, route concepts and things of that nature. But, I think Coach Rudd has a clean slate. And it's just a matter of who comes back healthy. We're talking Britton, we're talking Hammond. You've got some edge guys. We need some heat off the edge. So maybe a young guy emerges, a healthy Cam Robinson, a healthy running mate that he has on that side and some depth. So I'm optimistic. I'm very optimistic. I'm just not sure exactly what it's going to look like.
Brad, do they have to make a bowl game? Do they have to get to 6 wins?
If they don't, there's going to have to be some real reasons why. right? And I'm not talking about excuses. I'm talking about reasons why, right? They get three of their four non-conference games at home, right? They're going to get Coastal Carolina open. They're going to go to Raleigh in a non-conference game against NC State. They're going to come back home for William & Mary, and then in somewhere in October, they'll play Washington State. This year, they get Florida State, Stanford, Tech, and Wake Forest at home. They go to Berkeley. They go to Louisville. They go to Duke, and they go to North Carolina. That's a schedule that I feel like you should be able to find six wins on, right? It's not the same as this year. Now, one of the things that's weird is that you're not really sure what these other teams are going to be either, right? You know what I mean? And so, like, part of you looks at the schedule and goes, well, they should be able to do this, but you're not really sure who everybody is. That being said, when you get three of your four non-conference games at home and the other one's in Raleigh, right? I think that you should be able to find two wins in your ACC schedule, maybe three or four, right? You know, there are certainly some beatable teams on that list. The trick, I think, for them, and beyond just like not knowing what the roster will look like, you know, tonight as we sit here at 9:27 p.m. on Tuesday, December 17th. But beyond that, it's like, okay, they've got a quarterback and they seem to have a backup quarterback. Okay, good. They signed a couple kids in the recruiting class, I think, are pretty quality. Okay, good. So the most important position seems to be taken care of. So what do you do with it, right? It wasn't that long ago we thought the quarterback position was taken care of too, right? And so I think that as I look to next season, my expectation is I do believe, Preston, they got to make a bowl game. I think if they don't, I mean, the level, if it's a rough year again, the level of apathy will just be staggering, right? If they don't make a bowl game, it will be because they lost some games close, probably, that they shouldn't have. And if that's the case, man, the sentiment will not be good. I think they've got to start strong. I think they've got to be able to close better. We obviously don't know the specific weeks, but it has to be a foregone conclusion, I think, for this staff that they should remain. Because I think that if there's any doubt, the lack of fan support, the lack of investment, this is just not the time for any athletic department to feel like it is completely out of touch with its fans. There's never been a time, I think, more important for your fans to be excited about your revenue sports than it is now, because you used to really hope that these folks would give money. You used to really need them to. Now it's the lifeblood of the thing, right? And it's going to change in a very real way once you start talking about revenue share and everything else is coming. So I would like to think that this is a team that should be able to get to the postseason. It's hard for me to fathom how that's going to look when, you know, we haven't seen it. I will say that kid at quarterback, the Morris kid at quarterback, is a program defining player, right? He's a game maker. And when I say that, I mean, he makes things happen, right? He is that talented. That being said, it has to come to fruition. And so for me, I think that you're exactly right. Like, they have to go to the postseason. And if they don't, they better have a very clear reason why. And it better be a lot more than we just didn't have the guys ready to play.
Yeah, Cub, you mentioned earlier in the podcast, looking at last season's schedule, the 50-50 games. There's a lot of 50-50 games on this schedule, right?
I agree wholeheartedly, you know. And so, but you got to get them. You gotta get them, you know. So you got Wake coming in this year with Clawson, you know, resigned, stepping down, you know, that so suddenly there. NC State, don't know what they're going to do. You know, Washington State, don't know what they're going to do. They're coming a long way away. I think Manny Diaz really has Duke rolling, and they've got a talented quarterback coming in. But, you know, how will we match up against them? You know, what is Florida State going to be? No idea. You know, and so, you know, when you look at all of those what ifs, you're like, man, it's a ton of 50-50 games. You got to get six of those 50-50 games. You know, if you beat Coastal Carolina, you beat William & Mary, all right? So let's just say those two are locked. And then if you've got nine other 50-50 games, you got to get four or five of those 50-50 games. You know, the ball will bounce a certain kind of way, but you got to get those games. And I wanted to just chime in. Brad said that Morris is a game changer. Is Morris Coach Elliott Bryce Perkins?
That's a good question. And
And soundbite clipped.
that's a good question. Listen, he's that talented. With all love and respect to Bryce, I think he's probably more talented. The question, though, is Bryce had pieces around him that fit him and made him better, not necessarily just from a stat standpoint, but from a fit standpoint, right? So you're not going to have Malachi Fields, unless I don't know, there's some crazy change of heart or whatever, right? You're going to need guys to step up. You're going to need pieces to coalesce. And I think that's the question, right? There's obviously a big chance that he might bring somebody with him. I think he's the type of player who can help you go out and get other guys. But I think that's a very, that is, that might be the defining question. Like, is this kid good enough to carry you in a way that Bryce Perkins did for them in 2019?
I will say at the beginning of the season, I said Virginia should be in the 5 to 6 win range. They end up being on the lower side of that at 5 wins. So that I said they should have been in a bowl game. This year, they have to be in a bowl game. And I think we've already established that it has to happen because it's year 4. Other teams have done it quicker. And I know the circumstances have not been in Virginia's favor kind of from the get-go. But it's year 4. It's kind of I keep, saying it's put up or shut up time for Tony Elliott and this coaching staff. And I think that's how I'll end this podcast. That is the state of the UVA football program. Brad Cove, want to thank you for coming on the podcast. It was good conversation today. So yeah, thanks again for coming on.
Happy
Thanks
to
for
do
having
it.
me, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Have a good Christmas, everyone. That is it for the Who's On podcast. We will catch you next week with more.